DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
Tonight is the night. We're going to be live at the Marlowe's in Brookhaven. I'll give you all the details about that coming up and why you're going to want to be there. So stay tuned for later on the program. I will give you everything you need to know about that. Before that, though, here on, as we're saying it this week, under Dog Nation Daily, let's dive into the big one on Saturday between Georgia and Alabama. And, you know, the storyline, and there's so many rich storylines. I think if you're a professional writer, one of these media people, and I know the average fan kind of gets tired of a lot of these things, the drum being beaten over and over again over the course of the week. But there are a few storylines that really cannot be ignored for this game. And one of those is that Kirby Smart is going to once again try to become the first former Nick Saban assistant, a guy that's worked with Saban, to actually beat him in a head-to-head situation as a head coach later on. And I want to start the show with that this way because, believe it or not, I actually think that Nick Saban said something kind of interesting about that this week. And I thought that Nick Saban was pretty gracious in his explanation for why it is that up to this point in time, that's never happened before. Now, there are a lot of former Saban assistants now working in the SEC. In a case of a guy like Kirby Smart or maybe Jimbo Fisher, Texas A&M, certainly they're building the kinds of programs that may be able to get this done in the future. But that has not happened up until right now. And I thought that when Saban talked about that this week, he actually gave kind of some interesting insight on why he thinks that's never taken place. So let's begin with Nick Saban here. And that'll set us up for a fun conversation. Here is the Alabama coach.
I think that all those things are circumstantial. Obviously, Georgia's got one of the best teams in the country, and Kirby's built that there and proved that circumstance so that they are one of the best teams in the country. A lot of guys that we've played against in the past that are our assistants, they were rebuilding programs that were down and hadn't had an opportunity to build them up. So it's not always been a level playing field, but we certainly have a lot of respect for Georgia and what they've done and what they're capable of, and we're going to do everything we can to try to get our players ready to be ready for the challenge.
I actually think it's a pretty interesting answer from Nick Saban, and in a roundabout way, the sort of too long didn't read version of Saban's remarks there are, most of the my former assistants who've coached against me had really no chance of winning that game. Think about Jim McElwain, a former Alabama offensive coordinator turned Florida head coach. They met each other twice in SEC championship games. The fact of the matter is Florida was not the kind of team that was going to ever be capable of winning that kind of game. McElwain just was not a good enough recruiter. And on you could go with other examples of that, of guys that have worked with Saban who become head coaches who are just not going to be capable of beating Saban in that particular game, because they weren't able to build the kind of roster that can go toe-to-toe with Alabama. But that's one of the things that makes Georgia obviously pretty different. Georgia, even if it's not quite the equal in terms of a former 4- and 5-star ratio of players and talent on the roster, what Kirby Smart has done in his 3 short seasons at Georgia is pretty remarkable in how it's closed the gap on Alabama as fast as it is. Now, we will find out on Saturday if that gap has been closed all the way, or if there's still a little bit of a sliver of daylight in between Alabama and Georgia for right now. But there's no doubt that of the people that have worked with Saban, worked for Saban, now competing against Saban, Kirby Smart has clearly put himself in a category that few other assistants have been in. And in fact, we almost saw the student knock off the teacher a year ago. And Kirby Smart doesn't like to talk about schedules for achievement or schedules for success. But pretty clearly, that would have been pretty fast for Kirby Smart to get past Nick Saban had it happened in last year's national championship game. It almost did, but it didn't. Alabama won the game. And now the specter of that rematch also hangs over this game once again with Smart trying to be the first assistant to beat Nick Saban. Now, as you might imagine, neither one of these guys are all that interested in the underdog storyline for this week. I mean, from Kirby Smart's perspective, he's not even so sure that what happened last year in that game in January has really all that much impact whatsoever on what's going to happen this particular Saturday in the SEC championship game. Here is what Kirby Smart had to say about that.
I don't know that it was inevitable. I mean, certainly both of us had to win some football games to get to it. I think last year's game is last year's game, and our kids are really focused on playing good football. That's really all we've worried about for the last 5 to 6 weeks since the LSU loss, is moving forward and trying to grow as a team and get better. That's been our focal point. It really hasn't been much about last year.
So listen, for people who do what I do for a living and for a lot of media members and just average fans alike, I think, I mean, if you want to just use our show as an example of this, I believe over the last calendar year, we've probably talked about the possibility of Georgia and Alabama rematching the SEC championship game in some form just about every single day. But for Kirby Smart, he says, no, that wasn't inevitable. That was not something that we were always counting on happening. We were just more worried about actually qualifying to play in the game once again and getting better after the LSU loss. The circumstances for Alabama are a little bit different, but Nick Saban weighed on this too. For his own team, he wasn't so sure, but he doesn't mind tossing it out there that he sort of knew it was always going to be Georgia that was going to be in this game in this particular Saturday. Here's Saban on the same subject.
I really thought that playing Georgia last year and knowing the kind of players that they had coming back and the job that they do there, the job that Kirby does with his entire staff, that they would have an excellent chance to come back in the game. I never really thought much about how our team would develop. You hope your team develops. You always have a lot of holes to fill. You've got a new team, and so we were just trying to focus on what we could do to get our team to be able to play as well as they could play and hope that that was good enough to win our division. And as it turns out, even though we don't have a lot of depth in some areas and we've lost some key players in some places, we've been able to overcome those things and feel fortunate to have the opportunity to play in the SEC championship game.
So at this point, I should probably reset the entire conversation. Kirby Smart is trying to make history on Saturday. He's trying to be the first guy that's worked for Saban to actually beat Saban as a head coach. And he came very close to doing it last year. In a lot of ways, this is a rematch of what we saw in last year's national championship game. But the odds makers, if you want to believe them, it's one of the reasons why we're talking about Underdog Nation Daily this week. If you believe the odds makers, they're not expecting this year's game to be as close as last year's national championship, the one in which Kirby almost beat Saban. The experts, the media, the betting folks, they're saying, yeah, that may have been close last year. That may have been a razor-thin margin, but this should be a comfortable Alabama victory. And maybe it'll end up being that way. Maybe come Sunday or Monday, we're all disappointed about that. However, in this pursuit of history for Smart, to knock off his mentor, to knock off his teacher, the guy that paved the way for him to have the great success he's having at Georgia, it is kind of worth pointing out that despite the fact that Alabama has unquestionably been the best team in the country all season long, and at one point in time, Georgia had some real legitimate issues and struggles, there is a feeling around these two teams right now that if you had to pick which one you'd rather have, I don't know, maybe this is the, I guess, the Homer in me coming out. Maybe this is just the way I want to see things. But certainly there is the sense that the feeling around Georgia is preferable to the feeling around Alabama. Let me give you a couple of examples of what I'm talking about here. Listen to the way that Kirby Smart was facing questions after his team's win against Georgia Tech. Now, Georgia Tech's no great shakes. They just saw their coach retire because of some ineffectiveness around the program. I'll grant you that. But listen to the word that Smart's asked about here. Does Georgia have a swagger right now? Obviously, a swagger helps if you're trying to knock off Nick Saban for the very first time. And maybe Georgia does have one after winning five straight, after putting up a bunch of points, after beating some really good teams as of late. Does Georgia have a little swagger as it heads towards Atlanta and the SEC championship? Kirby had an interesting answer to that.
I don't know really what swagger comes from or what it stems from. I mean, what we did today, you would think we'd build swagger, but it has nothing to do with what we're doing moving forward from a defensive perspective. I think continuity and playing well and building momentum helps on offense.
Yeah, so Kirby Smart obviously feeling pretty good about that, saying, and it's another example of what he's done a lot of over the course of the last few days, talking about that on offense as opposed to defense. It seems like he's more confident in his offense right now than his defense. But clearly, he feels good about the stretch that Georgia's been on and the winning streak that Georgia's put together as of late. As we head towards Saturday and the rematch against Alabama, contrast that for a moment with Nick Saban, who, if you look back at the Iron Bowl win over Auburn and the ugly scuffling affair with Citadel the week before that, Nick Saban has apparently seen a lot from his team as of late that he's not too happy about whatsoever. Here is a very different response after Alabama finishes its regular season. Here's Saban once again.
I have not been pleased with the way we played in the first half in the last two games on the really either side of the ball. We don't seem to have the kind of intensity, mental energy to start the game that you'd like to see in your team or that we had earlier in the season. So we want to play for 60 minutes in the game. So if we don't start out well, we want to start out better. And if we don't finish well, we want to finish better. So these are all things that we need to focus on improving on.
So let me see if I can sum all this up this way. It's obviously the potential of a historic day for Kirby Smart on Saturday. He could be the first to do something a lot of folks have tried to do in the coaching profession. The experts don't quite think it's going to happen. However, it's hard to deny that right now there's an energy around the Georgia program on the basis of some good performances over the last five games that doesn't seem to be matched by the feeling around Alabama, who probably isn't playing quite as well right now as it seemingly did earlier in the season. Now, on paper, Alabama is still the better team. That's why they're the heavy favorite in this game. But I think there's an energy that Georgia brings into Atlanta with it on Saturday that could make this game very interesting, and I feel like we're probably on the same boat here. We just can't wait for it to get here. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Underdog Nation Daily, the daily podcast with the fans of the two-touchdown underdog Georgia Bulldogs. Kirby Smart trying to beat Saban for the first time. Georgia trying to move back into the college football playoff. It could be a very interesting day, and what a week it is as we cover that for you here along our road to Atlanta. Good to have you with us live on video, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. Good to be with our friends in the Classic City each and every day. And in podcast form, pretty much wherever you find podcasts, on demand audio version of our program, whether it be the Apple Podcast Player or the worldfamousdognation.com, the Google Podcast Player for the Android devices. We're just really glad to have you here on a Dog Nation Daily here today, or as we call it this week, Underdog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. And speaking of Marco's Pizza, how about you do this? Enjoy a tasty two-a-day with Marco's Pizza. Get two medium, two-topping pizzas from Marco's for an everyday value of just $6.99 each. Say hello, Primo, by ordering yours today from Marco's.com. Great to have Marco's on the program with us. We are very busy on today's program. Later on today, we're going to hear from Brad Nessler, the guy that will call the game from a play-by-play standpoint on CBS Saturday afternoon. We'll look forward to hearing Brad Nessler on that a little bit later on. Also coming up in a couple of minutes, we'll talk to our buddy, the great former Georgia quarterback, David Green. Really good stuff from David Green coming up as he gives us some insight on both these quarterbacks in this game. Jake Fromm, who David's been a great supporter of all season long, and I think that Fromm has rewarded that with some really good play as of late. And also, he'll talk about Tua Tagovailoa, who obviously is a load to deal with on Saturday. And speaking of Tua, let me actually kind of keep that going for right now, because if you watch DN90, which is a weekly, actually it's a daily short video deal that we do around Dog Nation, kind of covering the news of the day around Dog Nation, in addition to what we do on our normal program. You know, we talked this week about something that Jonathan Ledbetter said, and there were some Alabama fans who kind of pounced on this and kind of said this was Ledbetter making excuses for why Alabama beat Georgia a year ago, or maybe showing some ill preparation on Georgia's part for the game of the national championship. I don't think that's what any of this is. But Ledbetter was a little bit honest when he talked about Tua Tagovailoa and last year's national championship game, that there is a thing that you see about Tua when you see him on the field, that if you haven't spent a lot of time preparing for it, he can provide some surprises for you. Maybe, for instance, a little bit more mobile than you might think. I mean, I thought Ledbetter was pretty honest when he said this week that, yeah, you know, seeing Tua in the second half of last year's national championship game, that was a very big difference from Jalen Hurts, who had been the starter all season long. Here is Ledbetter on Tua Tagovailoa.
Last year, you know, there wasn't much tape at all to really watch. Just kind of a throw-it-in-your-face type thing, you know, just throw somebody out there because, you know, our number one guy isn't getting it done right now. And we kind of game-planned for Jalen Hurts the whole time. You know, we saw what kind of player he was. We saw what kind of plays he made. And we didn't really have anything to go off of. I mean, watching Tua, so it was just kind of in-game adjustments that you had to make. And we didn't know that he was that elusive. We didn't know he had an arm like that. And I think watching tape on anybody kind of gives you a sense of comfortability, knowing kind of what they do, knowing their tendencies. And tape doesn't lie, but once you look at that and see what people do, you can kind of gauge what kind of player they are and, you know, what they like to do.
We heard from Kirby Smart last January that certainly he was expecting Tua Tagovailoa to go into the game, how much he gave his own players, you know, stuff to think about in regards to that. Maybe he withheld some of that information. Maybe he told them about that. We weren't in the locker room. We don't know. I think the overall takeaway from what Ledbetter says about Tua is he's a very good quarterback, and facing him on the field, there's a lot to deal with, both in terms of his arm and his legs. But the weird thing about Tua, and we haven't talked much about this week, although we probably should, for a while, Tua did not look 100% healthy. He was a little hobbled. He was not seemingly himself. The stats a little bit lower. Just the visual mobility somewhat limited. Now, he did take his knee brace off recently. Did not play with that, I guess, in the Auburn game. And he was asked this week in terms of, do you plan on wearing the knee brace again for Georgia and kind of the overall state of your health right now? So let's get an important update from Tua on that in terms of just how healthy he is coming into this game.
I feel like it was kind of a hindrance, but the doctors wanted me to use it just to check my PCL, but I told him it'd be possible that we could take it off just because of my mobility with it on isn't the same. So we got it taken off, and, you know, it does feel a lot better.
Do you plan on wearing it this weekend?
Not at all. No, sir.
So I think it's interesting from Tagovailoa. I mean, I've told you on the show before that I think you could just look at him recently and say, yeah, he doesn't completely seem healthy. But apparently now he's healthy enough that he doesn't need to consider wearing the knee brace. So we will see how that plays out on Saturday's SEC championship. I think that's one of those hidden storylines that could be interesting. We'll also talk more about that tonight with our big event, Road to Atlanta, live at the Marlowe's Tavern in Brookhaven. And this is one of those things that I really think you want to make plans to be a part of. It's going to be our most fun Marlowe's broadcast of the year. Last year, heading into the big game in December in Atlanta, it really was just a terrific, terrific event. I've told you before, I loved looking in that parking lot and seeing all those Georgia fan cars, those Georgia flags waving before last year's SEC championship, and this year's going to be just the same. Our buddy John Stinchcomb is going to be there. Jeff Sintel going to be on hand as well. It all starts at 6 p.m. It's from 6 to 8 p.m. tonight at the Marlowe's in Brookhaven. I'll give you the address so you can see this for yourself. 3575 Durden Drive. That's 3575 Durden Drive in Atlanta. Our Road to Atlanta live at the Marlowe's in Brookhaven. This is going to be a gigantic event. It's going to be so much fun and a great way to get ready for the big game this Saturday. We hope to see you there. For now, though, it's great to have you here on Underdog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. Brad Nessler later on. Let's talk to David Green right now.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
I'm already making plans for once this football season slows down, we get a little bit of break in December. Can't wait to get back to Athens. I got some Christmas shopping to do, and I'm going to do a lot of it at Tailgate Apparel. I'll encourage a lot of you to do the same thing. 279 East Broad Street in Athens, Georgia. Just I was wearing the Tailgate sweatshirt on Monday, and everybody was asking about that. A lot of that stuff that you see me wearing here on the show each and every week, especially those nice fleecy sweatshirts, that does come from Tailgate Apparel. We'll talk to David Green more about that in a couple minutes and come to some of the fun things they've got going on here this Christmas season there at Tailgate in Athens. But before that, David, hope you had a happy Thanksgiving. We appreciate you being back on our program here today as we look ahead to a big game for Georgia on Saturday. How are you doing today?
Man, doing great. I tell you, the excitement this week, though, what's to come with the game Saturday. I tell you, if you'd asked me a month ago or 2 months ago, I said, you know what, Brandon, we'd probably get beat by 30. But the way the team's playing right now, playing with so much confidence, I'm really, really excited to watch how this thing's going to go Saturday.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. I think that's a lot to think about. And obviously, before you joined us, one of the things we were talking about was Tua Tagovailoa, the Alabama quarterback. And obviously, any kind of potential success for Georgia in this game means finding a way to stop Tagovailoa. As a former quarterback yourself, what do you think of when you see this guy who has, you're really, to a certain degree, almost had unprecedented success this year? What impresses you about Tua, and what would you say about Georgia and its attempt to try to stop him on Saturday?
Well, it's pretty amazing how he's been able to play. I mean, after he played, you know, last year in a national championship game, I was joking around with a few guys. I said, he should retire now because his stock could never get any higher than what it was after last season. But the way he's come back this year, you know, took the starting job, and he's almost played perfect for the year, which is almost impossible to do. He's really, really tough to defend. Look, he could beat you with his legs. He's a smart quarterback. He finds the open receiver. He makes plays. I mean, the biggest difference is he has totally unlocked this Alabama offense. I mean, Alabama's had good receivers for a long time, Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley. They've had a lot of good receivers. They just hadn't had the explosive quarterback that could get them the ball. Really impressed with his, you know, decision-making, his touch, the way he throws the deep ball, the way he throws the short ball. He's a problem. He's tough to defend regardless. Look, I think when you look at Georgia's defense, we're going to have to give them, you know, different looks. We can't give up the big play. I think we still got to be very much committed to stopping the run. Try to get them in predictable situations, maybe where it's third and long. If we can do that, stopping the run is certainly going to be the key. And then when we have a chance to make a big play or a turnover, we've got to make it. You know, if he gives us a shot to make an interception, it can't be one of these deals where we drop it and, oh, maybe I'll get the next one. He doesn't do that often. We're going to have to play flawless football. We're going to have to fly around. We're going to have to be as aggressive and play as confident defensively as we've played these last few weeks.
And as a quick follow-up to that, you talk about stopping the run, which is obviously something to think about. Go back to last year's Rose Bowl for a moment. Now, Kirby said this week that the Oklahoma offenses and the Alabama offenses aren't that similar, but your issue about stopping the run, we saw that in the first half of that game. As good as Baker Mayfield is, I believe it was really that Oklahoma running game that almost knocked Georgia out of that game. Now, Georgia stiffened up defensively in the second half, but that's a classic example of this, that the way to get beat by a good quarterback is to also give a bunch of running yards. At that point in time, you just can't get off the field, right?
The one thing you want to do defensively is you want to make a team one-dimensional. And if Alabama can run the football at will, they're going to almost be impossible to beat. And that's really what took place in the second half of the game last year. And I can't remember the guy's last name, but number 22, who was a true freshman. Nobody had really seen him play. You know, he ran all over us late in the game last year. And we've really got to be committed to figuring out a way to stop the run. And like I said, we can't give up those explosive plays offensively. Look, they're going to make plays. They're a good football team. They score a lot of points. They've got a lot of good athletes. They're gonna make some things happen. We just got to, when we're inside that red zone, we've just got to find a way to make them kick field goals instead of score touchdowns.
We've obviously been talking about this team all season long, and one of the things that impressed me about you, David, was after Jake Fromm's performance against LSU, when there were some people who I think were starting to get a little skeptical of, is Fromm going to have as good a sophomore season as was promised after the really great success of his freshman season? But you remain steadfast. You've kind of always been a believer in Fromm. The phrase that you used before the season started is you really thought this was Fromm's team. Well, there was reason to doubt that after the LSU game, because I think even Fromm would admit he didn't play very well in Baton Rouge. And yet you didn't let your confidence waver in him, and he's really rewarded the folks who did remain confident in him, including Jim Chaney and Kirby Smart, with very impressive play after that. Big performance against Florida, huge on third down, on the road at Kentucky, threw four touchdown passes this past Saturday against Georgia Tech. This is a guy in this final five games of the season that has really kind of come into his own. What was it that you saw in him back then when there was reason to doubt if he really was going to be the guy that could lead Georgia back into this game?
Well, look, he's got the stuff. And when I say the stuff, he's got the ability, number one. He's got the leadership. He's got that it factor. Even last year, you could tell as a true freshman that the guys around him love him. That's a big part of it. He's one of those guys that can, the moment was never too big for him. What he did as a true freshman last year was remarkable. I mean, the kind of situations that he was put in, SEC championship, national championship, he never flinched. I mean, the moment was never too big for him. He has everything that you need in a quarterback to be able to win a championship. Now, the one thing you got to have him playing at a high level. The only thing that's been missing, that was missing early in the season, or I'd say specifically LSU, is he just didn't play at a high level against LSU. He had a poor performance, and we've been fortunate as Georgia fans, at his career so far. That would probably be the only game. Now, he's missed a couple throws here and there, but that's probably the only game that I would say that he's played poorly in. But that's part of it. I mean, look, you could ask a New England Patriots fan, Tom Brady has a game here and there where you go, what was that? Is the Brady era over? And everybody starts saying, is Tom past his prime? And then what does he do the following, 5 weeks? He slices and dices everybody and has big games. He's human like the rest of us. He's going to have bad games. And in any quarterback that ever plays at Georgia is going to have an off day every now and then. That's just part of being human.
So I thought that Jake Fromm said something pretty interesting this week about, hey, when they see the coverages they want, which I assume he means, man coverage with the chance to go deep, they got to take advantage of that. You've talked about that from your own career. When you saw stuff like that, you had to blow the top off the defense. Otherwise, then, Georgia's going to be turned into a one-dimensional offense, which you did not want to be. Is that really a key against Alabama, especially when we think about this Alabama secondary, still very good, but probably overall, probably not quite as deep as it was a season ago. It's not easy to attack the Alabama defense in any facet, but finding those opportunities to go for the home run ball with Jake Fromm and this pretty good Georgia wide receiver core right now, is that part of the key to success for Georgia this particular weekend?
Yeah, we there's no question about it. We've got to be aggressive. I mean, Alabama's going to score points. There's no doubt about it. They've scored on everybody all season long, and they're going to score some on Saturday. But we have the offense, but we can as well. I mean, we've got a really good offensive line. We've got quarterbacks that can make big plays. We've got receivers and tight ends that have all experienced a lot of success this year. When we have opportunities to make the plays, we've got to hit them. And we know, and I think all the Georgia fans and the players know, they're very capable of doing it, but you only have one shot. I mean, this is one game where you got to make it happen. And when we get into a situation where we can capitalize and make the play, we got to do it. You know, you're only going to have, you know, 75, 80 plays in a game. And versus a good team like Alabama, you cannot give too many of them away. We were doing that early in the season where we had opportunities, we were missing them. The good thing is here lately, we're hitting them. And confidence is such a big part of football, and you know, believing and knowing that you're going to make those plays. And right now, the thing that's got me excited is the team is playing with an edge. We've got that identity. We're a run-first team. I think we're kind of figuring out the puzzle of kind of who we are to be at our best, and it's coming together at the right time. So to answer your question, I think there's no doubt about it. When they have a chance to make a play, they're going to have to hit it.
I say this a lot of times, and I think people think I'm being funny when I say this, but I mean this in all seriousness. That Mercedes-Benz Stadium is such a different-looking stadium. You know, it's got the ring video board around the top. It's sort of a modern, almost what I think of as kind of a space-age type design. You played in the Georgia Dome in Georgia's first trip to the SEC Championship in 2002. That was a little bit more of a traditional-looking stadium, although it did have a roof on top of it. But it's a bigger stage than a normal game because there are fewer games on TV, more eyeballs watching you in what was Arkansas in your first trip to the SEC Championship back in 2002. Do you remember, did that game and the preparation, the lead up to that game, did it feel different than a normal game on a normal Saturday where everybody's playing college football? I mean, what were the butterflies like for you going on that artificial turf underneath the roof in the Georgia Dome, and how do you think that compares to what these Georgia players are going to feel this upcoming Saturday?
Yeah, I tell you, Brandon, there's nothing like it. It definitely does not feel like just another game. You know, you can feel the excitement. You know how big of a moment it is. I tell you something that's interesting that a lot of people wouldn't think about. One of the biggest differences, because, you know, in the SEC, we always play, you know, outside on turf, and there's a crown on the field, you know, obviously, so the rain will roll off. And so a lot of times when you're in the middle of the field and you're throwing out routes, you're kind of throwing downhill a little bit because there's always a little bit of a crown. So when you play in the dome and you play indoors, there's no crown on the field. So it changes. It's subtle. It's very subtle difference. But it does change the throwing angle just a little bit because you're not throwing downhill anymore. You're throwing, you know, on level ground. So there's little nuances. You just, you know, you got to make little adjustments, you know, just for your eyes. Your depth perception sometimes is a little bit different. But overall, man, what an awesome experience. I was always one I love, you know, kind of the turf feel. It's just easier with footing and everything like that. But getting the chance to play indoors, you know you've done something special to get that opportunity, and hopefully they just take advantage of it.
Yeah, Dave, that's a really good story and terrific insight on the difference between the indoor field and the outdoor natural grass field. I said this before you joined us, and I really am looking forward to this, a chance to get back to Athens. You know, on a game day Saturday, David, for me, and I know it's the same way with you when you go to Athens, there's so many responsibilities and obligations. I'm running around getting ready for that game and some of our broadcast duties around here. I don't get to shop around that much. I'm actually really looking forward to, hopefully, next couple of Saturdays once this season dies down, at least, you know, for a lull for a little bit, to kind of get back and go shopping. And I know the Tailgate Apparel right there in downtown Athens, when you're looking for a place to do some Christmas shopping and kind of check off every dog fan on your list, you know, that's just such a great place to be. David, it's cold right now. Those Tailgate Apparel sweatshirts, they look good, and I feel like they make great Christmas gifts, and I know the Tailgate's going to be hosting a lot of folks here for some holiday shopping over the next few weeks, and I know that downtown Athens with the city all decorated and looking nice, that's a pretty good place to do a little Christmas shopping over the next few weeks, is it not?
Well, I tell you, it's a great place to go, and I love their stuff and wear it to pretty much all the games and around the house and everything. And I tell you, it was a little embarrassing at the last game. It wasn't Tech, but the game before that, I'm out there and I'm wearing one of the Tailgate sweatshirts up there to stands, and one of the fans came up to me and said, "Hey, you know, Greeny, I just want to thank you for, you know, taking a picture with my son last year, and here's the picture." I looked at it, I was like, "My gosh, I'm wearing the exact same sweatshirt. I need to change my clothes every now and then." Like, maybe just switch it up a little bit every now and then, but yeah, it was funny. Yeah, I love the Tailgate sweatshirts, man. This time of year, they've got some good stuff. It's comfortable. and it's good looking as well.
Well, David, we hope you enjoy the game this weekend. We appreciate your work in helping us get prepared for that. We feel like we know more about it now that you've shared your insight, and we'll look forward to getting a chance to speak to you on our program here again very soon as well.
All right, Brad, appreciate you, buddy.
Really interesting stuff from David Green on the notion of the dome surface field compared to the outdoor field. You know, I guess the phrasing is they call them turtleback fields, and the reason why there's that hump in the middle is because it helps the drainage. You know, when it rains, it kind of runs down the hill. Your own house works for pretty much the same way, your yard there, and it seeps down the hill, you know, towards the sidelines and down the drains. That's how the field keeps from getting, you know, soaking wet after a pretty significant rain like we had on Saturday before Georgia Tech. But there's no need for that indoors because there's no rain to come in. You know, Mercedes-Benz Stadium's got a retractable roof. So, therefore, you got the completely flat ground, which is a little bit different of a throwing angle. Think about a starting pitcher on a or any kind of pitcher on a baseball field. Standing up on the mound as opposed to standing on flat ground, it's just a completely different throw. And as a former quarterback, David's going to have more insight on that than the average Joe is. Really good stuff from him there in that regard. By the way, it's Brad Nessler coming up later on. Before any of that, though, of course, we love the work that the Georgia football players are doing on the football field, and we also love the community that gets built around that with UGA alumni, because there's nothing quite like cheering on the Dogs in the SEC championship. It's this Saturday, of course, but you don't always have to be in Atlanta to experience it. Listen to this. This is kind of a cool thing. Through your local alumni chapter, you can also get into a gathering some other Bulldogs fans and have a great time. It's passionate volunteers who lead it. Alumni chapters could keep you connected to your fellow Bulldogs through meaningful events and charitable opportunities. You can do game watching parties, their dog days of service, also like some professional organizations where you do some networking, some philanthropic type stuff as well. There's a lot of other alumni in your city, pretty much whatever city you're living in. So make sure you share the joy of the season with other Bulldogs by attending one of our upcoming chapter holiday parties. There are 318,000 active alumni in 83 different chapters. Yes, that's true. Dog Nation does indeed stretch all corners of the world. UGA's commitment to you doesn't end when you leave school. No matter where you call home, you will never have to bark alone. I do like that line there. Simply go to this website, alumni.ud. Let me try that one more time. alumni.uga.edu/chapters. Once again, alumni.uga.edu/chapters. Enjoy the game this Saturday wherever you are. Truly, this is one where all UGA alumni and everyone who calls Dog Nation home, clearly they're going to be united as one come Saturday afternoon.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
All right, fascinating stuff from David Green. Really appreciate him being a part of our program here today. We will also looking forward to hear from CBS Sports' Brad Nessler coming up in a couple of minutes, too. That's going to be a lot of fun. Before we get to any of that, of course, here on Thursdays, we always do our MyBookie Best Bets. Now, normally we focus in on the games from around the SEC. There's obviously not a ton of SEC games on Saturday. There actually are two, one of which you may not even know about. I'll tell you about those coming up. But let's give our thoughts on how these games play out on Saturday and over the course of the weekend as part of our MyBookie Best Bets. This is relevant for Georgia in terms of its pursuit of the college football playoff. But, of course, let me remind you that if you want to do more than just watch these games, if you actually want to get some action down on the game, the place you want to go is to my friends at MyBookie, because when you win, you will get paid. That's what they're known for, the fast, no-hassle payout when you win. And they're also known for this, giving you an opportunity to be a winner before you even make your first bet. Simply use the promo code DOGNATION. It's obviously all one word, spelled the way it's supposed to be. DAWG. When you use the promo code DOGNATION at MyBookie, your first deposit can be matched up to 50%. But you got to go right now. That offer's not going to last forever, so take advantage of it while it's there, especially in time for the championship games of this weekend. What a fun series of games to get some action down on. Of course, it doesn't have to be just college football. It can be basketball. It can be hockey. It can be pro football. There are prop bets. There are in-game live wagering. There's also the best player perks in the business. So find MyBookie online, M-Y-B-O-O-K-I-E. Find them online and then use the promo code DOGNATION. Your first deposit can be matched up to 50%. And then after that, it's as simple as it can be. You play, you win, and you get paid. All right, some thoughts on some games quickly. Let me start with the Pac-12, and I'll do this one quick. It's a Friday night game, by the way, so if you're truly trying to bide some time until Saturday, give this one a look. Washington, cool game last Saturday in the snow against Washington State. Or actually, it was Friday. Last Friday night in the snow against Washington State. That was a fun visual on TV. They win, knocked the Wazoo out of this game. They step in. They're 5.5-point favorite against Utah. Kyle Whittingham, the Utes coach has been great as an underdog in his career. I'm actually going to go dog here. I'll take Utah plus the 5.5 and make that a my bookie best bet. I have no idea who wins the game, but closer than a touchdown, I believe, between Utah and Washington. Akron is at South Carolina. And the only reason why I put this game on here as a my bookie best bet is because of something dumb that Will Muschamp said this week. He said, hey, if you want to go to the SEC championship game, you got to practice this week. So our team better go ahead and get used to that this week, getting ready. And I want to say to what Muschamp, how about you worry about beating Akron before you start making plans to practice for an SEC championship game? Gamecocks a 30-point favorite. I'm going to take the Zips just because I like saying Zips. I'm going to take the Zips plus the 30. I'm going to make Akron a my bookie best bet. Let me go to Texas and Oklahoma. This is obviously a very significant game for Georgia's playoff chances. We talked yesterday both on Road to Atlanta driven by Cadillac and here on Underdog Nation Daily about the chances that Georgia could make the playoff as a two-loss team. Obviously, one of the things that would make that easier, assuming Georgia at least for a moment doesn't beat Alabama, one of the things that would make that easier is Texas taking care of Oklahoma. The thing that you feel good about is Tom Herman, if he can stay out of the strip club long enough, Tom Herman is a coach who has been really good as an underdog, including outright wins. Beat Oklahoma as an outright underdog earlier in the season. So I'm taking the Longhorns plus the 8. I'll make that a my bookie best bet. A couple other games to give you here for a moment. Clemson versus Pitt. Pitt is technically the home team in this game, although it's played in Charlotte. You'll hear a million times about the fact that the Panthers beat Clemson the last time these two teams played. This is a joke of a game, what has been a joke of a league this year. Even though it's a huge number, I actually like Clemson minus the 27.5. And, you know, in some cases, this may go to 28, which is obviously a pretty key number. But I actually like Clemson minus the big number as a pretty huge favorite in this game. So that's worth paying attention to. And then let me give you a Northwestern and Ohio State. This is another game that is going to have some significance in towards determining Georgia's chance of making the playoff, even if it were to suffer a close loss on Saturday. You know, this is also one of those games that at 14 or 14.5, that makes a big difference about where you get it. Northwestern, I guess, hasn't lost to anybody this season by more than 14 points, which is a significant statement because they've lost a lot. You know, this is probably a stay away from me, all things being equal. I don't think Georgia even needs Ohio State here to make the playoff, but I'll probably take Ohio State minus the 14.5, or depending on where you find it at my bookie, but I'll make them a my bookie best bet. And that will make that your SEC through. Another guy who's going to have a very fun broadcast coming up on Saturday on CBS is Brad Nessler, a good friend of our program, and it's great to have him back here today. Brad, thank you so much for your time. We're looking forward to seeing you, Georgia, and Alabama on CBS on Saturday. Thanks so much for being with us. Hope you're doing well today.
You got it, Brandon. How are you?
I'm doing great. And, you know, I wanted to start our conversation with this. I think that you would admit that you saw Georgia at its worst against LSU back in Baton Rouge. That was not a good game for UGA. Then you saw them the following game against Florida after a week off. And, you know, the Florida game, I think, became a springboard for much better play to the point where now maybe Georgia's got a chance to win this game where, you know, back in, October, that seemed like a impossibility. What have you thought of the improvement that you've observed from Georgia since they really kind of laid an egg on a national televised game that you covered?
Well, I think they're starting to do at a high level what they do best, and that's run the football first and then let Jake find his receivers and playmakers in the open field. I thought they got away from the running game against LSU too early. The fake field goal, had it worked, I guess Kirby would have looked like a genius, but that just sort of put the brakes on everything, and then they had a turnover after that, and it just snowballed on them. I think if they played LSU 10 times this year, they would have won 8 of them probably. So I think they've gotten back to knowing that they're the number one rushing team in the SEC, and there's a reason why. And, I think they've gotten a little bit healthier as well, but I just think sometimes you have to have a loss to learn from it, and you have to have something to coach from, and I think Kirby coached from that point really well, and some of the assistants. But, I think sometimes to get the kids' attention, something like that has to happen to go bad, and that's the only time they've faced adversity really up to that point, and now that they've faced it, they know they're going to face some more on Saturday.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And speaking of that opponent on Saturday, Brad, if I get my magnifying glass out and if I look as closely as I can at that other team, I guess the closest I can come to a criticism is saying they're imperfect. You know, they had some defensive breakdowns early against Auburn, didn't score 30 against LSU or Mississippi State. Does any of that add up? I guess you can throw the Citadel into that mix as well. Does any of that add up to Alabama being beatable on Saturday?
Well, you know, I think as they've played better teams, their numbers have come down. LSU's got a pretty darn good defense at every level, and you know, didn't have Devin White in the first half, but, you know, they have Greedy Williams and Grant Delpit in a front four that's, you know, NFL-worthy. Mississippi State had the same thing. Two of their guys on their front four, I think, are going to be, you know, high draft choices. And they got pressure on Tua and made him a little bit uncomfortable up the middle. He doesn't like having people around his knees, and you know, he doesn't mind the corner pressure or the outside pressure that much. But when he steps up in the pocket and he sees somebody in his face, he's not crazy about that. Now, can Georgia do that without bringing extra guys? I'm not sure. You know, those two teams, even though they got beat pretty bad, did enough to at least slow him down a little bit. But, yeah, you have to have a microscope. I would say, if anything, you can attack their secondary. I think Jake Fromm throws the ball outside the hashes as good as anybody in college football, and I think if there is a spot that you can pick on, it might be the two corners for Alabama, and that's looking in a microscope to find that stuff.
There are a lot of obvious storylines for this game. It's a rematch of last year's national championship. Kirby and Saban know each other about as well as any two coaches possibly can. You know, they're SEC rivals, of course, here. Which of these storylines is the most interesting to you? I know the CBS broadcast on Saturday will focus in on a lot of this kind of stuff. What do you find of the potential subplots to be the most fascinating?
I think the thing starts Georgia offensively right away is if they can control Quinnen Williams. He is a game wrecker at the nose, and if Lamont Gilliard and the two guards can handle him, I think that would go a long ways toward Georgia having success offensively. I would say if Georgia could get a lead and just make Alabama go, wait a minute, we haven't been here before other than 70 seconds against Ole Miss, you know, that they haven't been in a situation where they kind of tighten up a little bit. If Georgia could get a lead and just keep it for a while, I think that would make Alabama at least think about, boy, if this isn't going how we want it to go. And then I think turnovers and special teams plays, and I think Georgia has the advantage on special teams as far as their kicker, their punter, and Miko Hardman. If he could make a play, the punting game and the kicking game for Alabama is not very good. Those are the little things in their armor, and I think little dents that you could maybe take advantage of.
Let me do a quick final question with you, Brad, before we let you go. The SEC Championship game is my favorite event in all of sports. I'm talking about, you know, beyond just the ones that I cover. I just love this event. It does seem weird, though, to think that there's a storyline where Alabama could lose and still make the playoff, and I guess there's even a scenario where a two-loss Georgia could sneak in if the right confluence of events happened beyond that. As a guy who I know also loves this event, does it worry you that we're talking about, you know, a path for the loser of this game also making the playoff, or is the SEC Championship impervious to those kinds of conversations, and it's still going to matter no matter what the playoff storyline becomes?
Well, I think the committee has to make a decision one of these years on whether conference championships matter or not. So far, it doesn't seem like it matters, but it's in their criteria. But, you know, you look at it and you go, well, that didn't matter for Alabama last year. They didn't even play in it. But were they one of the four best teams? I think so. They won the whole thing. So if Alabama loses, I still think they're one of the four best teams. So I'm one of those, you know, guys that say, I don't really care what conference you come from. I've seen enough of them, and I've seen enough of everybody else. I mean, you know, I think Alabama would put 75 points on Oklahoma because they can't play defense. And I think the same thing could happen to Ohio State. I think if there's two teams, and I'm leaving Notre Dame out of this because I haven't seen them enough and sure, I'm not a big believer, but I think if there's two teams at least equipped to beat Alabama, Clemson's obviously one. I think Georgia's the other one. So if Georgia loses this game, they're probably not going to be in. You know, a lot of other things would have to happen, and for that to occur, Texas would have to beat Oklahoma pretty good, and Northwestern would have to beat Ohio State. That's still a possibility, but I think Alabama, if they lose and if it isn't disastrous, they're still in.
Saturday afternoon, Brad, is going to be a lot of fun. Looking forward to seeing you. Gary Danielson right there on CBS starting at 4 p.m. for going to be a great, great game between Georgia and Alabama. We appreciate you previewing it on our program here today.
You got it, Brandon. See you this weekend.
listen, I just am so excited about that. I love Brad Nessler, and I love Gary Danielson's call of this action. I said this before. It is just about my favorite event in all of sports, and I like it when it really matters. And I guess you can say in one respect it matters this year because it seems clear that it's the premier conference in the country, and this is the centerpiece game for the premier conference. So the game certainly has that going for it. We'll do our Gator Hitter Updater here in a moment. Before that, though, let me remind you, a couple big things going on this week with our tremendous partners and our family of stations here, including AM 750 WSB and News 95.5 on the radio. It's the only place to hear our Georgia people calling this game. Of course, pregame coverage begins 4 hours before the game. That's Eric Zier. That's the great former Georgia kicker Kevin Butler. And then the call of the game on the radio on News 95.5 and AM 750 starting at 4 p.m. with our buddy Scott Howard and Eric Zier. And then on the Channel 2 Action News Night Beat that night 11, you can hear interviews with Georgia players and coaches. We will see you tomorrow on Underdog Nation Daily.